Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 454, titled The War President in Action, being recorded on April 4th of the year 2004. There will be an article-length, detailed, annotated description of For the Record program 454 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com within a week or so of the airing of this program. Beginning of each For the Record description, there's a page to click on for those who would like to support the work that I'm doing. Sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows are available for download only at a longer URL linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, again, www.spitfirelist.com. The Spitfire website is now equipped with a search engine that one uses just like a regular search engine like Google or one of the others. And also, we are now upgrading the bandwidth for the Spitfire website, but it features the remarkable, vitally important, and long out-of-print book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, by the late heroic Paul Manning. It's available on Adobe Acrobat for download for free, so please be aware of that. Now, we're going to get back to a review from past programs of George Bush's efforts in the War on Terror. Bush, in the by now fairly famous Meet the Press interview with Tim Russert, characterized himself over and over as the war president, and the administration has been pitching its track record on September 11th and related matters as the reason to vote for George Bush. So we're taking a look at that track record right now. And again, all of this is review from past broadcasts. We're going to take a look at some information we looked at in For the Record 423. This is from Vanity Fair's issue of October of 2003, an article called Saving the Saudis by Craig Unger, who's soon going to be coming out with a book about September 11th, the Bushes and the Bin Ladens. Now, remember, in Side 1, we took a look at a Greg Palast article that discussed Omar and Abdullah bin Laden's connections to the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, identified as an al-Qaeda-related terrorist organization. This, in connection with the Bush administration, basically placing investigations of the Saudi elite off limits for FBI and CIA. Now, one of the most astounding post-September 11th actions by the Bush administration was to fly members of the Saudi elite out of the United States when no one else could fly, including not only members of the bin Laden family, but specifically members of the bin Laden family linked to al-Qaeda-related activities, including Omar, Abdullah, and Khalil bin Laden. Skipping down in this article, did a simple disclaimer from the bin Laden family mean that no one in the entire family had any contacts or useful information whatsoever? Not long after 9/11, Carmen bin Laden, an estranged sister-in-law of Osama's, told ABC News that she thought members of the family might have given money to Osama. Osama's brother-in-law, Mohammed Jamal Khalifa, was widely reported to be an important figure in al-Qaeda and was accused of having ties to the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, to the October 2000 bombing of the USS Cole, and to the funding of a Philippine terrorist group. Khalifa was reported to be in the Philippines in September of 2001. Khalil bin Laden, who boarded a plane in Orlando that eventually took him back to Saudi Arabia, won the attention of Brazilian investigators for possible terrorist connections. According to a Brazilian paper, he had business connections in the Brazilian province of Minas Gerais, not far from the tri-border region, an alleged center for training terrorists. Then there were the secret FBI documents detailing Abdullah and Omar bin Laden's involvement with the World Assembly of Muslim Youth. Indian officials and the Philippine military have both cited WAMY for funding terrorism in Kashmir and the Philippines. Quote, WAMY was involved in terrorist support activity, says a security official who served under George W. Bush. There's no doubt about it. Unquote. FBI officials declined to comment on the investigation, which was reported in the Britain's Guardian, but the documents show that the file on Abdullah and Omar was reopened on September 19, 2001, while the Saudi repatriation was still underway. Quote, these documents show there was an open FBI investigation into these guys at the time of their departure, unquote, says David Armstrong, an investigator for the Public Education Center, the Washington, D.C. Foundation that obtained the documents. So one of the Bush administration's first post-9/11 activities was to fly members of the bin Laden family, including members of the family implicated in al-Qaeda, out of the country when no one else could fly. Now, another of the very significant outgrowths of the structural economic relationships between members of the GOP, the petroleum industry, and the Saudi elite, including members of the bin Laden family and others implicated in the funding of al-Qaeda, one of the outgrowths of that was a Republican Party subgroup called the Islamic Institute, founded by Grover Norquist, a top GOP lobbyist. The Islamic Institute, in turn, became heavily overlapped with the GOP's Ethnic Outreach Organization, an organization that had incorporated Nazi elements in the aftermath of World War II, those elements still present as late as 1988 on the elder George Bush's campaign. In the latter years of the Cold War, members of the conservative Muslim elite, including elements linked to the Al-Taqwa milieu, the Muslim Brotherhood financial organization that itself has connections running back to World War II. And one of the interesting things concerning these structural economic relationships, which in turn have birthed political relationships, is that the Islamic Institute and the GOP Ethnic Outreach Organization had elements within them that were basically implicated in the funding of al-Qaeda and terrorist-related activities. As a result, there were people associated with the Bush administration and the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, including the Islamic Institute, that interceded on behalf of the targets of the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th, 2002. Those raids basically busted a series of Islamic charities and businesses that had been apparently involved in helping to finance Islamic terrorism, including the activities of al-Qaeda and Hamas. These funding conduits date back to the anti-Soviet Mujahideen effort of the late 70s and 1980s and early 90s, and they were still in operation. They basically just switched to the financing of al-Qaeda. One of the most significant aspects of the Operation Green Quest raids was the fact that the Bush administration, in all probability because of the direct links between elements of the Republican Party and the Bush administration, and some of the individuals targeted in the Operation Green Quest raids of 3/20/2002, the Bush administration interceded on behalf of the targets of that raid. Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, under whose stewardship the raids were conducted, was subsequently dismissed. And as we're going to see, the investigators into Operation Green Quest were basically harassed and surveilled by the FBI and CIA, and as of now, the Operation Green Quest raids have to a certain extent been interdicted by the Bush administration. We're going to turn now to information that we've looked at both in For the Record 356 and 415. This is from an article, In Difficult Times, Muslims Count on an Unlikely Advocate, by Tom Hamburger and Glenn R. Simpson. This is from the Wall Street Journal of, and I don't have the date here. This was in June, I believe, June 9th of 2003. This article includes information about the role of Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, and Talat Altman, a director of Harkin Energy and a close ally of the Bush administration, in setting up the Islamic Institute. That brief conversation between Norquist and Karl Rove in Austin, Texas, helped start a new chapter in Mr. Norquist's career and in the political lives of Muslims in this country. The following year, Mr. Norquist started the nonprofit Islamic Free Market Institute. In collaboration with Mr. Rove, now Mr. Bush's chief political advisor, he and other institute leaders courted Muslim voters for the Bush 2000 presidential campaign. Mr. Norquist even credits gains among Muslims with putting Mr. Bush in a position to win the critical Florida contest. To run the nonprofit's day-to-day operations, Mr. Norquist turned to Khalid Safouri, a Palestinian-American raised in Kuwait who had been an official of the American Muslim Council, a political group in Washington. The Institute's founding chairman was a Palestinian-American, Talat Altman, who had served with Mr. Bush on the board of Harkin Energy Corporation and later visited the president in the White House, according to records obtained by the National Security News Service. And then in another article, O'Neill met Muslim activists tied to charities by Glenn R. Simpson and Roger Thurow from the Wall Street Journal of April 18th of 2002. That article was from early June of 2003. I will have the exact date for you in the description. I believe it was June 11th, may have been June 9th. But in an article that appeared again in the Wall Street Journal of April 18th, 2002, Talat Otman, a close political ally of both George's Bush, a man who had given a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention in 2000, a director of Harkin Energy, one of George Bush's failed energy companies, interceded with the targets of Operation Green Quest, with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who was subsequently let go. From the article by Roger Simpson and by Glenn R. Simpson and Roger Thoreau, among the Muslim leaders attending the meeting with O'Neill was Talat Otman, a longtime associate and supporter of President Bush's family, who gave a benediction at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia in August of 2000. But he also serves with Barzinji on the board of Amana Mutual Funds Trust, an investment firm founded by M. Yaqub Mirza, the Northern Virginia businessman who set up most of the entities targeted by the Treasury and whose tax records were sought in the raid. Then skipping down, the case also highlights conflicts between the Bush administration's domestic political goals and its war on terror. GOP officials began courting the U.S. Muslim community intensely in the late 1990s, seeking to add that ethnic bloc to the party's political base. And skipping down again, more about Yaqub Mirza, on whose boards Talat Otman sits. Two nonprofits affiliated with Mr. Mirza and named in the search warrant, the SAR Foundation and the Heritage Education Trust Incorporated, held large blocks of shares in Amana's mutual funds in 1997, according to SEC records. The SEC documents and other records detailing connections between Mr. Otman and the Islamic Institute, on the board of which Mr. Otman serves, and the raided groups were compiled by the National Security News Service, a Washington-based nonprofit research group. Skipping down again, Mr. Otman also was on the board of Mr. Safouri's and Norquist's Islamic Institute, the GOP-leaning group that received $20,000 from the Safa Trust, one of the raid's targets. The president of the Safa Trust, Jamal Barzinji, is a former business associate of Switzerland-based investor Youssef Nada, whose assets were frozen last fall after the Treasury designated him a person suspected of giving aid to terrorists. Parenthetically, Jamal Barzinji is also associated with the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, and of course, Al-Taqwa, or Nada Management, is one of the principal Muslim Brotherhood financial organs involved with financing Al-Qaeda and Hamas. Youssef Nada was a former Third Reich intelligence agent and is also a defendant in the trillion-dollar lawsuit filed by survivors of the victims of 9/11. Continuing with the article, Mr. Otman has ties to the Bush family going back to the 1980s when he served with George W. Bush on the board of a Texas petroleum firm, Harkin Oil and Gas Incorporated. Mr. Otman has visited the White House during the administrations of both President Bush and his father, George H.W. Bush. Another article about the Operation Green Quest raids, this also from the Wall Street Journal, this from March 22nd of 2002. Funds under terror probe flowed from offshore. This was also authored by Glenn R. Simpson working with Michael Phillips. Talking about some of the organizations targeted in the raids and on whose behalf Bush associate Talat Otman interceded, and again, Otman, Karl Rove, and Grover Norquist set up the Islamic Institute, which has heavily overlapped with the targets of the Operation Green Quest raids. Speaking of the organizations targeted, these include Al-Taqwa Management, a recently liquidated Swiss company the U.S. government believes acted as a banker for Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda terrorist network. Two people affiliated with the companies and charities are linked by records to entities already designated as terrorists by the U.S. government. Hisham al-Talib, who served as an officer of SAR, the International Institute of Islamic Thought, and Safa Trust Incorporated, another Mirza charity during the 1970s, was an officer of firms run by Youssef M. Nada, records show. Mr. Nada is a Swiss-based businessman whose assets have been frozen by the U.S. for alleged involvement in terrorist financing, and is alleged by U.S. officials to be a key figure in the Taqwa network. Jamal Barzinji, an officer of Mr. Mirza's company Marjak and other entities, also was involved with Mr. Nada's companies in the 1970s, according to bank documents from Liechtenstein. A message was left yesterday for Mr. Barzinji at his address in Herndon. Mr. Barzinji and Mr. Talib live across the street from each other. A third business associate of Mr. Nada, Ali Galeb Himat, who also has been designated by the Treasury as aiding terrorism, is listed as an official of the Geneva branch of another charity operated by Mr. Mirza, the International Islamic Charitable Organization. And again, reviewing from the book Dollars for Terror about Youssef Nada, again, he's an individual whose activities are heavily overlapped with this GOP milieu on whose behalf Talat Altman and others interceded. But Youssef Nada is even better known to the Egyptian intelligence services, who have evidence of his membership in the armed branch of the Muslim Brothers in the 1940s. At that time, according to the same sources, he was working for the Abwehr under Admiral Canaris and took part in a plot against King Farouk. This was not the first time that the path of the Muslim Brothers crossed that of the servants of the Third Reich. By the way, the Abwehr was German military intelligence during World War II. In addition to the fact that a close Bush associate and business partner and a GOP operative, Talat Altman, himself linked to some of the targets of Operation Green Quest, interceded with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who was gone 8 months later, for the record 425 and 447, we examined information from the book Terrorist Hunter, authored by Rita Katz, using the nom de plume of Anonymous. Rita Katz had infiltrated the milieu of the Islamist funding institutes in this country and helped to launch the investigation that resulted in Operation Green Quest. In her book Terrorist Hunter, again authored under the pseudonym of Anonymous, she later has broken her anonymity, we took a look at the fact that after the Operation Green Quest raids, the CIA and FBI began harassing the investigators of those raids. This book, by the way, Terrorist Hunter, published by Triple C, an imprint of HarperCollins in 2003. Of the Bush administration's targeting of the investigators of Operation Green Quest, of course it should have been the other way around, but Bush associates were interceding on behalf of the targets of Operation Green Quest, alleged funders of Hamas and Al-Qaeda. Of the targeting of the investigators, we read, "The CIA was investigating me and the SAR investigators from Green Quest and Customs. The CIA and the FBI investigated everyone who had anything to do with the SAR investigation. White vans and SUVs with dark windows appeared near all the homes of the SAR investigators. All agents, some of whom were very experienced with surveillance, knew they were being followed. So was I. I felt that I was being followed everywhere and watched at home, in the supermarket, on the way to work, and for what? The customs agents were questioned. So were their supervisors. So was the U.S. attorney on the SAR case. One of the questions they were all asked was whether they'd leaked material to me. They all kept saying that this was the most preposterous idea. They all said that before I came, none of them had the slightest clue about SAR and 555 Grove Street. They said that there was nothing of value that they could give me that I didn't have already. That it was I who gave them the material, not the other way around. None of the investigated parties has the slightest clue as to the real reason they were being investigated. Risking criticism for being unfoundedly paranoid, I must convey my theory about the investigation and the CIA's involvement in it. I don't know for certain what's the deal with the CIA investigating the SAR investigators, but it sure feels as if someone in that agency doesn't like the idea that the Saudi Arabian boat is being rocked. The raids on 555 had taken place already. The CIA couldn't change that. But investigating and giving the people behind the raids a hard time is a most efficient way of making sure the SAR investigation stops there. Which, come to think of it, may be the reason the government looks so unfavorably on the lawsuit filed by 9/11 victims' families against several Saudi entities and individuals, accusing them of funding terrorism and seeking damages. So again, after Bush associate, business partner, and GOP bigwig Talat Altman intercedes on behalf of the targets of Operation Green Quest, the investigators are then harassed by FBI and CIA. I would note, too, that the Bush administration blocked out 28 pages from a congressional report on the September 11th attacks, and that those 28 pages had to do with Saudi entities suspected of being terrorist financial conduits. We're going to turn now to an article by David Armstrong. This is from Harper's issue of March of 2004. We covered this in For the Record 447. This article is called Charity Cases. Why has the Bush administration failed to stop Saudi funding of terrorism? And skipping down in the article, we read, but despite those efforts, the United States has made only limited progress in blocking the funding of terrorists. Al-Qaeda and other Islamic terrorist groups remain well-financed, and one of their major sources of financing, a network of Islamic charities financed by Saudi Arabia, remains relatively uninterrupted. It's tough talk notwithstanding, the Bush administration has failed to take decisive action against this significant source of terrorist financing, in part, it seems, to protect the government of Saudi Arabia and its friends in Washington. The Bush administration has adopted an approach to Saudi terrorist funding that would be best described as hands-off. For example, last summer it censored the 28 pages on the subject from a congressional report on the September 11th attacks and refused to release the names of Saudi entities suspected of being financiers of terrorism. And also under the new Department of Homeland Security, responsibility for the Operation Green Quest investigation has been turned over to the FBI, which has proved less than vigorous. And this has, in the opinion of Dave Armstrong, pretty much set the entire Operation Green Quest investigation on its ear. Returning to the Dave Armstrong article from Harper's. Now, under an agreement between Attorney General John Ashcroft and Department of Homeland Security head Tom Ridge, signed in May of 2003, the Customs Service, part of Homeland Security since last March, has relinquished control of its counterterrorism investigations to the FBI, which repeatedly had refused to turn over critical investigative files to Green Quest agents. This deal between Ashcroft and Ridge effectively shut down Green Quest, quashing the one serious, if flawed, probe into domestic terrorist financing. So note that the terror financing networks remain largely untouched. Eventually, that is going to bear fruit, and very unpleasant fruit indeed. By the way, one of the things that I noted in For the Record program number 310, we came back to this in number 424, was the fact that in June of 2001, George Bush appointed Robert Mueller to be head of the FBI, and as a former U.S. attorney, Mueller had basically overseen less than vigorous investigations into, among other entities, the BCCI, as well as into the bombing of Pan Am 103. Those investigations, had they gone as far as they might have, would have uncovered connections between the first Bush administration and some of the very terrorists we were supposed to be combating. And I noted the fact that with Mueller's previous record, his ability to operate freely would be very much hampered, and that one could expect sort of a reflexive cover-up by Mueller of any investigations that would lead in the direction of the Bush structural financial relationships with some of the Saudi entities that were involved with the financing of terror, including Osama bin Laden. Again, that discussed in For the Record 310 from July 8th of 2001, and I came back to that in FTR 424. Now, one of the things that the war president had steadfastly maintained was that we were going to invade Iraq in order to help fight the war on terror. Many U.S. counterterror experts pointed out that, first of all, there was no definitive link between Saddam Hussein and September 11th, that it was more likely that Saddam Hussein would turn weapons of mass destruction over to terrorists if we invaded, and that invading Iraq would not only take critical resources away from the war against al-Qaeda, but also would inflame public opinion in the Muslim world against the United States in such a way as to greatly augment al-Qaeda recruiting. There were, however, connections between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. The ironic thing is that following a Syrian crackdown on the Syrian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood did establish some links to Saddam Hussein, and that ultimately the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood's links to Saddam Hussein did lead to some contact between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. But this was not in connection with September 11th, but rather Rather, Saddam Hussein was looking to al-Qaeda as sort of a backup unit in the event that he got knocked off by the United States. And specifically, what he was doing was apparently channeling expertise about biological weaponry and other weapons of mass destruction to al-Qaeda so they could use those as sort of a backup unit if he got knocked off. Well, of course, what Bush did was to knock him off and basically to swat that particular hornet's nest. We're going to turn now to the book In the Name of Osama Bin Laden, Global Terrorism and the Bin Laden Brotherhood, authored by Roland Jacquard, published in softcover by Duke University Press softcover edition, 2002. Of the contacts between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein so that Saddam Hussein could give them information about weapons of mass destruction in order to be used as a backup unit if we knocked off Saddam Hussein, we read the following. In 1998, after declining all offers that had come to them through official diplomatic channels, those services are reported to have established a secret operational connection with bin Laden in Manila and in Kashmir. It was indeed difficult for Iraq to ignore an Arab like Osama bin Laden who so effectively humiliated the Americans, unquote. Colonel Khairala al-Tikriti, the brother of the head of the Mukhabarat, the intelligence services, is reported to have been named case officer for the connection. The arrest of two Moroccan associates of bin Laden in Rabat on November 11, 1998, made it possible to establish the existence of this link with certainty. According to Western sources, the Iraqi services have sought to secure the assistance of bin Laden's networks in case Iraq were to be attacked by the United States in order to carry out attacks against American targets in Arab countries. One more time. According to Western sources, the Iraqi services have sought to secure the assistance of bin Laden's networks in case Iraq were again to be attacked by the United States in order to carry out attacks against American targets in Arab countries. According to Arab sources, in anticipation of a foreseeable reversal of alliances in Kabul, bin Laden had been in discreet contact since September 2000 with associates of Uday Hussein, another of Saddam's sons. The ground for agreement was the anti-Israeli and anti-American battle. Bin Laden and the Iraqis are said to have exchanged information about chemical and biological weapons, despite the opposition of some of the Baghdad leadership, including Tariq Aziz. So, in addition to putting into play the very scenario under which Saddam Hussein would have given weaponry to al-Qaeda, weapons of mass destruction, namely a U.S. invasion, so too we're going to conclude with a look that basically confirms what U.S. intelligence analysts had been predicting, which is that in addition to drawing off vital resources needed to combat al-Qaeda, the invasion of Iraq basically greatly aided Islamic fundamentalist terrorist recruiting in the Muslim world. This article is from the Washington Post from Sunday, April 4th of 2004. Article by Walter Pincus, Spread of Bin Laden Ideology Cited. The first paragraph, the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq has accelerated the spread of Osama bin Laden's anti-Americanism among once local Islamic militant movements, increasing danger to the United States as the al-Qaeda network is becoming less able to mount attacks, according to senior intelligence officials at the CIA and State Department. So that is basically what we were warned against by our intelligence services, is what Bush, the war president, did. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 454, The War President in Action, being recorded on April 4th of 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.